Hi, gang. I'm Lance. I'm an addict.
Hi, Lance.
Okay, this is recovery. You can take the masks off now, all right? I'm having flashbacks. I think I used to hang out with some of you guys somewhere along the line. That guy in the hippie thing. Where's the ghouls at? I was with them for a while, too. I'm just another dope fiend like the rest of you. Just trying to get another day clean, so... This is the worst thing I hate to do, believe me. But from the day one, I was told I got to do what I don't want to do. And I got to start changing the way this thing operates and start instilling some new behaviors, I guess. At that time, if somebody would have used that word, I would have ran for the door thinking somebody was going to try to pull some psychology stuff on me. But... Just in case anybody hasn't seen me for a while, my home group is still back to basics, Tuesday night, with the devil. Sparky over there. But it's great to be here. I want to thank the Lower Highlands area for dope feeding me, asking me to speak tonight. I hate this stuff. And I tell you why I hate it, all right? Because I don't know if anybody's like me, but one thing I really don't want to do is tell you who I am, right? I mean, I hid in the shadows and had the facades and, tried all these other different things to be who I didn't think you would like, if you knew who I was. Obviously, if you found out all my fears and shortcomings, you wouldn't want to hang out with me. So, from an early age, as far back as I can remember, some days, I didn't feel all right in my own skin. I felt like the odd man out. I hate microphones, too. Even when I was, had the gang, growing up with them, I still felt different. I don't know what it was. I always was looking for something outside of myself, so fantasy was a big part of my life. And that's cool if you're, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. It's a problem if you're 35, 40 years old. And you're still dealing in fantasy, illusions, and you don't have a grip on reality, and the world's passing you by and leaving you in the dust, And that's what the world will do when you decide to stay Peter Pan, getting high with the Never Ever Boys and the Lost Boys of Never Ever Land, thinking you're fighting Captain Hook, whatever authority that might be. And the world blows by. And at 36 years old, it was hard to cope. It was hard to cope, But I didn't start out like that. I had aspirations. I had dreams. I was, growing up. Besides the Catholic school twisted my mind for a while. I got a mixed message right off the bat. I'm a recovering Catholic, by the way. Right off the bat, my mother was a devout Catholic, and my dad didn't believe in any gods. The guy with the biggest teeth wins. So suck it up and hoe it. Toe the line. And that's how I was raised, with the Mayflower altar in the end of the hall every May, with the Blessed Mary on it and all the flowers around it. And... absolution and communion, and so I guess I have absolution, so I've been forgiven already, right? So, let's all go get high. I had some different signals coming in. What a dysfunctional family. Today I believe my father's a functioning alcoholic, and I'm his son, so I can label him, And I love him. And I spend a lot of time with him nowadays. He's 77. And there was a period in my life When my mother and father got divorced when I was like 8 or 9 years old, and for an addict, this was very handy, because then I had my first things to blame everything on, the divorce. And I had the opportunity to whip it out in front of teachers whenever they were like cornering me and wanting to give me 4 whacks for acting out in school or whatever. But I'm poor divorced kid, you know, and I'd bring out the crocodile tears. And I learned how to manipulate people in an early age. You know? And I think the first time I got high, you know, thinking back, that's the gift of this, you know. That's why when somebody asks you to speak, even though you dread or you want to go run and hide, unless you're an egomaniac like Matt, wherever he is. Is he here? Is Matt here? I love Matt. Matt the Hat. This is what gets you clean. You know, doing, like I said earlier, doing the things I didn't want to do. And the magic is, it's kind of like at the meeting, right? It's kind of like at the meeting. You know, as it goes around the room, the topic, and I hear people say, oh, I hate when I get out, I'm not trying to think what to say next. And well, that's cool, man. That's cool. You know, get all worried what you're going to say, because that's how we change. That's how we change. Everything we do here in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous helps the change happen, right? Because everything I did, you know, I don't know about you guys, but the first time somebody handed me a roach, hey, you want to smoke a roach? I'm like, what the hell is a roach? And you don't want to, like, say that. You want to be like, oh, cool and shit. So you're like, oh, yeah, man, I'll do that roach. I hope they don't hand me a bug on fire. Yeah. Growing up in Pittsburgh, I still say it through Pittsburgh, right? And all that. But, slowly but surely, you know, by the time I'm at the end of the line, I'm driving down the street with my knee, cutting lines, looking in the rearview mirror more than I'm looking forward, and I got it down pat. You know what I'm saying? From not knowing what a roach was to doing all that stuff at the end, right? Like it was clockwork. It was part of me. It was ingrained now for years. The bell rang, I salivated. So I needed something to change that. And a bunch of long-haired leapy gnomes in Pittsburgh and Narcotics Anonymous helped me. And I'm really grateful for those guys. Matter of fact, Wednesday I was online with a couple of them and called a couple of them all around the United States and went across seas. Don't get nervous if I cry. It's okay, I can cry today. I'm all right with my masculinity, guys. But, you know, you get clean with people, and they're still clean today, and you share some shit, and you go through some stuff, you get connected. And that's cool, because that's all I ever wanted to really do, is be able to be a human being. That's why I wasn't all right in my own skin, is I didn't know how to be a human being. You know, I was a human doing whatever it took to fill that hole that I thought, you know, inside of me. And it had to come from outside. I couldn't generate it. Well, that was the lie. That was the lie. I got my spark back. I got my spirit back. And it's running. It's capable of generating some energy. In the end, I was so void of any spirituality, I had to suck yours out of you like a vampire, like a spiritual vampire. That was by manipulating you, taking you hostage, you know, controlling you, conning you, you know, convincing you that I didn't step on it at all, man. What are you talking about? I'd never do that shit. You know, and that's because I couldn't... I wasn't okay with myself. I had to suck your spirit out of you. Bide for your attention one way or the other. Even negative was all right. You know, that's dysfunction. That's insanity. And, you know, we read something somewhere in our basic text that talks about our perception being flawed. it always jumps out at me. There's all these words in recovery that have like jumped out and stuck with me, you know. And our second step talks about coming to believe. Came to believe that we could be, you know, power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Came to believe that power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. If we let it. If I let it. See, something happened when I showed up here. A guy named Tom M., big, tall, blonde, long-haired, leaping gnome from Oakland, came up one day and he said, "Here, take this, man. I'm going to give you something you're going to cherish the rest of your life. You hang around." And I put my hand out, and he dropped this thing in my hand, and I'm like, "You didn't give me nothing, Tom." He said, "Yeah, I did." You know, he was like spooky. I said, "Well, I just gave you choice." And he walked away. Tom later died from bone cancer because when he was in his active addiction and to get his drugs, because he was like spent every other avenue out, he would deliberately break his knees to go to the hospital and get painkillers. He did that for 3 years straight. He died clean. Died some years under his belt too. So that was cool. But that's the lengths we go to, you know, by any means possible. Hey, I grew up, nobody was going to tell me what to do. I hate authority. Rock and roll, you know, free the people, don't trust anybody over 30. Don't trust anybody over 70, man. And all that stuff. So, you know, it is amazing that I would succumb to becoming a slave to something else. You know? But that's how this disease works. I can see the salesman coming. I can see the car salesman, the insurance guy, you know, the con coming. But I can lie to myself in a New York minute. Quicker than that. I believe this disease talks to me in my own voice inside my head. And it tells me it's okay. Real subtly, you know. Even today, it's the little things I got to watch out for. And this might sound crazy, but you know, I wake up. I don't know if anybody else. I hate to get out of bed in the morning. You know, I don't want to face the world. I'm laying there, and the disease is on the bedpost, already doing sit-ups, sit soured and shaved. And it's saying, all this stuff from yesterday is running in my head. And I said, why did they say? And there's all this agenda going on. And, of course, everybody's against me, and I'm right, and they're all wrong. Hey, I got 21 years clean, and that still happens. All right? That's the enemy. That's the enemy. But if you got up before 6 a.m. this morning, you got more clean time than I do. Because right here, right now, is all that matters. You know? It's the only time we can make stuff happen. Now. That 21 years is gone. It's what I do right here, right now. So, like I said earlier, I'm just another furball like you guys trying to get another day clean. So. And that's what I was taught from the get-go. It's about the moment. It's about right now and the choices I make. And I was lucky to have a sponsor that kind of knew I didn't like authority, so he let me fall on my face freely a lot, and then tell me the solution. Steve R. His last name was Rush. And that's why I wanted him to sponsor, because I thought he had a cool last name, Steve Rush. no, but man, I'd die for that guy today. And I've had I had him for 13 years, and I have one now that I hardly ever call, Edgar, the mad Aztec. But I didn't know what it was like to have a relationship with somebody, you know, men, you know. And I don't mean talking spit, you know, swapping spit or nothing. I mean talking about, you know, talking about that stuff we hate, feelings. Talking about feelings and jackpots and admitting that you might be insane. I hated that stuff. But like Steve said, hey, you know, get a home group, do something for the home group, get involved. And I'm thinking in the back of my head, yeah, this sounds like I'll be out on the corner selling flowers, you know, when walking by cars asking for money soon for narcotics. Oh, this is like the Moonies or something, man. Yeah. I know you guys do something. After I leave the meeting, you all put antlers on to do some kind of weird ritual or something. I know it. I'm serious. I'm talking, you know, I did not want to be here. I was looking for every avenue. What attracted me, besides the girls hugging me, was I kind of felt what everybody was talking about. You know, my first meeting, this is kind of how it went, right? And I'm not going to talk about a drug log or all the stuff. You know, I mean, at age 13, I was doing LSD in my basement all by myself, right? You might have a problem if you're all by yourself doing two or three hits of acid just so you can experience it, you know? You might have a problem if you're putting it in your vein at 14 all by yourself just to experience it cold, you know, cold. Because if you heat it up, it doesn't work. It doesn't work hot. And I was looking for something. And so when I heard this stuff about, I'm glad nobody said spirituality back in the day. You know, when everybody was talking about their feelings, I kind of honed in on that because I felt the same way. I was like, oh, I didn't know. I didn't think anybody felt the way I did here. You know, and that's why I stuck around. Those guys with long hair, black leather jackets, and you know, didn't smile at nobody, but they gave me a hug. And a funny thing happened at my first NA meeting. It was Better Change, Route 51 and Brownsville Road, Whitehall. If anybody's from the Burg. Still going on, I believe. I think they remodeled the hall there. My first meeting there was right after I got out of rehab for the third time. I'd gone in to visit my mom, Pleasant Hills. And I wanted to get high. I wanted to go over to the bar in Bill Green Shopping Center and get loaded. And I remember Tom M. talking about how he ran across the NA helpline when he got clean in the phone book. It was when he was dialing, looking for the dope man from his best friend's apartment that was sitting in a chair dead for 2 days in Oakland. And he pulled out this phone book and knew that there was this connection named Narcissus. And he was going down through the phone book and crossed over Narcotics Anonymous in Pittsburgh, 1-800 number. Or back then it was a regular number. And I remembered that when Tom told that in his lead. And so I did the same thing that night. I called up the 800 number. Because I was living up here, you know, guerrilla farming cannabis in the Alleghenies outside of Evansburg, PA, and smuggling stuff out of Tucumcari, New Mexico, and Tucson and Phoenix back to Pittsburgh, and like living this guerrilla existence. There wasn't much happening. Every time I go to rehab and come here, I go to these meetings around. I'm talking 1988, October 28th, 1988. And I would go to these meetings because NA wasn't matured, I guess, is the best way to say in Johnstown. So I had these guys dragging me to the other fellowship. And that's cool. I mean, you know, whatever works. But for me, I was long haired leaping numb. I wasn't listening to Archie Bunker. That's exactly where it was at, you know. And as soon as he said, "Shut the fuck up, put the cotton out of your ear, put it in your mouth," I was like, "Fuck you, old man, I'm out of here." And I, you know, it still pisses me off. Sorry. I hope you're not selling this tape. But that's the way it was back then, right? When I walked in that meeting, you know, these guys went around the room talking about their feelings on a topic. Well, they would say, put all these things in a hat, and they picked it out. It was an Ask the Basket. I didn't know. Yeah. They came around to me, and they said, "Do you want to share?" Oh. You know, tell me not to say nothing. I'm all renegade, and I'm ready to stomp on you. But ask me if I want to speak. Now I'm scared to death. You know, I learned something then. You know, I learned something about my ego and why I have an ego. Because of fear. Fear. And the basic text tells us the core of our disease. Fear, anger, and resentments. The triangle of self-obsession. It's a good IP. If you haven't read it, pick it up. I read it and said, "Oh my God, this is me." and I started getting a grip on things because, you know, I got here and it was like, okay, I admit I'm powerless. I know my life's unmanageable, you know. I know I'm crazy. I don't want to hear about a God. I'll throw that one away. Yeah, I'll write an autobiography, you know. And I love to tell somebody about it. I didn't have a clue what was going on. See, I was living in such an illusion, in such a subculture, in such a what I thought was the counterculture at the time, and we were going to change the world or whatever. We got lost in oblivion somewhere along the way. Oblivion Express. I wasn't living in the real world. I was living out of step with time and reality. And that's a scary thing, man. That's a prison. That's like being in some kind of weird B-movie, you know? And I started to feel that, and I wanted to be a real person. I wanted to be, and we say it here, and it's scary as hell when we read it. I think about that every time we read it. Productive member of society. Boy, that sounds square. Yeah, lame. But we do recover. And I didn't realize that I was my own worst enemy. It was me drawing the conclusions of what I thought was happening. You know, I was imagining a lot of stuff, and it was based on fears, angers, and resentments. You know, so I wake up in the morning, right, like I'm talking about, and that voice keeps starts talking. It's up. It's waiting for me, and it wants to project. Pull out the crystal ball and figure out what's going to happen for the day and who my enemies already are. And I'm cocked and loaded, right? I don't believe them anymore. I got to laugh at myself because I shake that off. I push myself out of bed, and the first thing I do is make it. It's a simple act. But I never liked making my bed. So I make my bed, man. And I'll tell you why. If I leave it unmade, it represents the slacker I used to be. That's the best way to put it. Put it off till tomorrow. Take a softer, easier way out, but be a tough guy. Yeah. It's hard to make the bed. It's hard to make the bed for me, you know. Yeah. But man, was I lost. So I'm grateful for Steve and Jimmy D. And, you know, I can name countless of guys that are still around, still clean. And you know, I can see myself on Potomac Avenue in Eaton Park and Jimmy D. throwing $20 down in front of me and saying, "Lance, here's 20 bucks. Go get high. You're driving me crazy. I can't take it. You may as well just go get loaded. That's what you want to do." And I'd get so mad at him for that. And then they'd all start laughing at me. You know, the whole table. "Yeah, you're acting out. Oh, you're off the hook." And but I wanted what they had. I wanted what those guys had. They had stuff going on. They didn't look like they were afraid anymore. They didn't look like they had to pretend to be something so they, you didn't know they were afraid, I guess is what I'm trying to say here. And courage. They had some fortitude. They had some integrity. Some integrity. You know? And they had a life. They had a life. And they all had like 3 or 4 years clean, and I had like 6 months. You know? And here's the funny thing. It wasn't until about, I don't know, I can't remember, 6, 8 years clean, it dawned on me that they were all 6 to 8 years younger than me. See, it doesn't matter what age, race, creed, religion, or lack of religion here. It's what's going on that matters. And I didn't even think about their age. I didn't even think about none of that with those guys. I was thinking about the energy. When I got here, I was like a dried sponge, a hollow core. I was void of any spiritual condition. So, you know, that funny thing happens. Everything's an awakening now. You watch a movie, Little House on the Prairie. Oh, that's recovery. Oh, you watch Little Mr. Rogers. He's talking recovery too. You know. And I think that's because I was so empty and so willing. My desire was so strong to want to live again that everything had a new meaning for me. And man, I chased that like I chased the dope. Bobby C. Emotional Rescue, Tuesday nights, Potomac Avenue. "Lance, I could tell you how to get clean." "Oh. Yo, I'm not worthy." Bobby. Yeah, buddy. I thought he was going to tell me a secret, right? He says, "Look, all you got to do is quit doing everything you used to do. You'll be all right." "I ain't doing nothing wrong. What are you talking about, man? I'm all right. I'm cool." Yeah. He says, "Yeah, keep coming back, Lance." But that's what's really neat around here, because I never see me, right? I never see me. The hope I get and the strength I get is the guy with 24 hours, the newcomer, or my sponsor. I watch people change here and grow. You know? Unfortunately, though, I do watch some victims too, because we are victims of our own devices. You know, and I have been too. You know, I'm not judging, I'm just saying, you know. And I watch this disease take people out. And that's what I believe. When I don't call them losers, I call them victims. I don't know why I've been blessed to wake up and have a presence, a grasp on reality and realize my condition. But I'm just... really grateful, because buried a bunch of guys over the years. I guess we all have too, but and I got a lot of respect for that. That's a little part of my recovery process, is to honor those folks, so their life wasn't in vain. I try to stay clean and work a program a little bit, you know. Try to change a little bit. because somebody just gave up their life for me. You know, to be a neon sign along the roadway, don't go this way, or you'll be dead. I'm going to die soon enough. I got more years behind me than I do in front of me right now, I think. I'm shooting for 100, though. I can't even imagine why I did all that crazy shit, you know. I just wanted to belong. I just wanted to be a human being. And the steps and the traditions, the home group, other recovering addicts, and this is the key too, some humility. Like Steve used to say, Lance, if you don't find humility, you're going to find humiliation. And that's true. Even today, I hear those words in the back of my head when I make a fool out of myself in front of a whole group of people, like at work or whatever, you know. And reel that ego back in. And 'cause what's really worked for me is the principles I found here. Humility, surrender, tolerance, acceptance, unconditional love. Boy. You want me to be intimate. Can I be a tough guy and, like, you know, be the pawns in the corner? Yeah. It's hard for me to reach out, you know. I got that first number from my sponsor, and he says, this is what I want you to do. I want you to call me every night. Right? I go home at 36 years of age, and I'm looking at the number, right? And I'm afraid to make a phone call at 36 years of age. Afraid to call another person. What do you say? I don't know this guy. Yeah. Maybe he's going to case my house and rob me if I, you know, get to know him too. I used to think everybody had the agenda I had, you know. You know, if I was doing things, then surely you were doing the same things. You know? That was the illusions too. Couldn't trust anybody. You know, forget trust. I'd steal your dope and help you look for it. I've done that. I could have. You did the same thing, right? Oh, wait, I forgot something in the house. I'll be right back. Right. I'll meet you at the bar. Go ahead, guys. But, so I got here and started doing things I didn't want us to do. And then Steve comes up to me and I said, I knew it. Here comes the Mooney thing. He says, Lance, I think you ought to get involved and do some H&I work. I do this thing out of this adolescent thing out in Bridgeville. Would you come along and maybe just, you know, share some experience, strength, and hope? I said, Steve, why do I have to go do H&I? You know? He says, because you're a self-centered, greedy son of a bitch. You need to give for a change instead of take all the time. And he was right, you know. Because I'm walking around 9 months clean. You know, 6-9 months clean. I ain't getting nothing out of the meetings anymore. I ain't getting. You know, after all, you folks are all here, so I could get something. You know, I forgot that maybe I need to give some too. You know? The love you receive is equal to the love you give. That's a natural law. And the Beatles said it too, so it must be cool. But I got to tell you, I went and did the H&I, and I came out and said, oh, man, I feel great, Steve. That's cool. We're helping people. I'm helping saving people's lives. He says, no, you're not. I said, what do you mean? Isn't that why we're doing this? He said, no. What we did tonight is you didn't use, I didn't use. If somebody in that room got anything, that's a bonus. He says, you don't have any power over the disease of addiction. That's the first step. You can't make anybody get clean. We can be an example. But I have no power over the disease of addiction. You know? And that's what I learned about this disease, and I started to understand some things, you know, that my redemption lied in, you know, picking up the pieces, making amends. I hate to use the word, but some sort of redemption started happening, you know. And I started doing H&I because I didn't want to do it. And of course, the bonus happens, though. You know, someday somebody walks up to you at a convention, and they go, "Man, I remember you 3 years ago. I got 3 years clean. You used to come out to the detox and at Montsoor Hospital." And it's like cha-ching. That's payday. It's a jolt. It's okay. You can have a jolt recovery. It's a rush, man. You know, that's the real deal. You know, because then you get a little. I got a little self-worth too, right? I can't say enough about being a member. You know, you remember when you say you are, but I can't say enough about being a member of Narcotics Anonymous, because it was those kind of things, little by little, inch by inch, day by day, that started to change me. And a funny thing happens, you start to like yourself. Right? I never knew how much I hated myself or had no respect for myself. I thought my body, I think the best word to describe it is I was a brat. I was a brat, you know. I thought this body was given to me so I could abuse it and have nothing, seek nothing but pleasure and, you know, oh, me, give me it all. You know, there wasn't enough fast cars, enough dope, and enough women to wrap around it. That's the truth, you know. There wasn't enough stimulation. Today, unfortunately, no. Today, with the God of my understanding, and you know, I told you when they got to the third step, I was like out the door, right? But I do have a God of my understanding today, and I don't get into it because, you know, hey, it's America, man. You pick what you want. That's Narcotics Anonymous too. Pick what you want. Just make sure he's loving. Although Wade used to have Satan for about his first 2 years clean down in Pittsburgh. He was it worked. Eh? It works. He was into it for a while. But it started to dawn on me that I was given a lot of talents. And I believe we all are, right? We did a lot of stuff to survive day by day with nothing. With nothing. We got talents, I'm telling you. And I've seen guys before me and after me excel with stuff. You know, my sponsor, the only way he could go cop was to get on his 7-horsepower Sears tractor with 240s in his pocket and drive 6 miles across town on a riding lawnmower because nobody would give him a set of keys. And the dope man's like, "Hey, Steve, I think you got a problem." "No, I'm all right." Off he goes down there. Today, he has a doctorate in procurement and management and works for a pretty good company. And I watched him educate himself, go back to community college, you know, and all this. And so he was an inspiration to me, you know. And the sky's the limit. It's all based on what my limitations, what I put on myself, what my fears tell me, you know, worthless. You'll never amount to nothing. You're no good, Lance. NG. That was my mom's favorite word. You're nothing but an NG, Lance. NG, as she disappeared around the corner. Nah. God of my understanding gave me great stuff. The sin, or the brat, the waste, is me not using or developing what's been given to me. That's where I'm at with my conscious contact today. So where do you want to go today? Do you know who the enemy is? You know, I started hearing those kind of stuff. Creed's new song, "Who's the Enemy?" Great tune. Great tune. Who's the enemy, man? I'm my own worst enemy. The disease I used to put it on the table, you know, talk about my disease like it's over here, right? You know, it's me. It's entwined in my thinking, my whole process. And it's only through working the steps, working the traditions, doing a fourth step, humbly asking, you know, humbly asking to go out of my understanding to remove my shortcomings. And that's a killer, because for me, when I got to 6 and 7, I thought, since I was being such a good guy, like God would like remove my defects of character. And the funny thing for me was that I continued to put myself in pain and jackpots, and I didn't want to keep doing them. I was tired of doing them, but I was also compulsed to continue to do them, and that took some work. That stuff takes some work. Thank God Steve said, you're on 6 and 7 for 6 months and then we're moving on. You're too sick. So I got a grasp of the understanding, and some of my character defects are ingrained in granite, as Frano used to say. And I still act out, and I still have some stuff, but you know what? That's okay. I'm a human being. I'm working on it, man. I know what I need to work on, at least today. I got a shot at it, you know. And I got to tell you, the rush today is facing my fears, you know, because getting out of bed is just a small thing. It's the friction of the day. It's the friction of the day for me when I got to perform. And it's odd. A bunch of folks have hired me, and a bunch of folks have promoted me, and a bunch of folks have given me some kind of responsibility. And I sit in the room with these folks. I call them the suits. And there I am again, right? I'm not all right in my own skin. I don't belong here. They're going to find out I'm faking. They're going to find out I'm pretending. You know? They're going to find it out. And that voice comes in. You know, the rush is facing that and going through it, you know, and rising to the occasion. That's where I get my jolts today. I don't want to sit in the front seat when I come to a meeting, especially a meeting I've never been to before. I go sit in the front seat. Because I used to sit against the back wall like the shooter in High Noon, right? Where nobody get behind you, right? Survey the room. Of course, if you were behind me, then you must be talking about me. You know, if I sit up front, everybody's talking about me. I just, as if I'm that important. Jeez, oh man, what a nut. Seriously, you know? So now I sit in the front of the room for two reasons. So I know nobody's talking about me. Face myself, my insane thinking, and because I'm afraid to. Also, I'm afraid to be up there. You know, funny things happen in the front of the room. There's nobody in front of you to distract you to what's going on. You know? So it's the front of the room, man. As corny as that sounds, it works. And that's because ashtrays. I didn't want to pick up ashtrays. Put out chairs, put out tables. The coffee pot. And then I'll shut up. This is it in a nutshell. I took a commitment to make coffee for my home group with 30 days clean. And the commitment, after I took it, yeah, I'll do that. I'll make the coffee. That sounds easy. Was for a year afterwards. I thought, well, this is NA. You take that commitment's for a year. And you know, everything's a year. I don't know what's up with that. You can't speak to you every year. You can't sponsor somebody. You can't make, you know. Mainly because it isn't that I was brain dead. So, yeah. You probably need to be focusing on your recovery instead of getting everything else in your first year. So, I think that was the old premise. You know, work on yourself. Don't worry about all the other stuff. So I owned that coffee pot for a year. Matter of fact, there were some nights I didn't want to go to a meeting, or I maybe wanted to go do something else, but that coffee pot was haunting me because I made the best coffee, And it was like, you know, get stuff out, you measure it, you portion it out, and you know, it was like familiar stuff, right? And I'd always driving down the road with the knee, cutting a line, looking in the rearview mirror. That was the car. You know. Don't dare touch my coffee pot at back the base or better change. That was my coffee pot. But a funny thing happened. 52 weeks went by. And they were during the group conscience, they said, "Oh, Lance, your year's up," the secretary. And she said, "Anybody else?" I said, "Wait, I..." But it dawned on me, I started something at point A, and I saw it all the way through to the end. My whole life, I was great out of the gate. A lot of enthusiasm in the beginning, but I never finished anything I started. I never finished anything I started. I owe my life to a coffee pot. It taught me how to start something and finish it. Go from point A to point B. Make the commitment, see it through, and it was a rush. I know this sounds silly, but 37 years old, I'm getting a rush because I did the 52 cups of coffee, pots of coffee. So I repeat that stuff daily. I repeat that same mechanisms daily, you know. And it's gotten me so far. I'm still alive and well. Today, besides having some folks trust me with a responsibility and an operation, because believe me, I was unemployable. I was unemployable. You know, today people, what suckers. Today, they actually look, and it says that in our basic text, that outside the rooms we'll be sought after for our opinions and our experience and our what we might have to offer. And that happens today. You know, that part of the basic text is true for me. Although, I'm telling you, there's days I don't think I deserve it or that they're going to find me out. But the real deal is, yeah, we can make it happen, man. Change reality here and now. You know? Alter it. And that's Tom M. I have a choice. Yeah. I can go get high. Don't get me wrong. There's days I think, man, what a rush it would be. Right? But today I choose not to fall victim to my own lie. That it's going to offer me something. Because all it has ever offered me is jails, institutions, and death. You know? Thank you for asking me to speak. I love you all.